There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you are not one of them.
You want to
keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Fall, my co-host. Nasser Hamid will be bringing us Motorsports Mondial in the second part of the show. This is podcast number 332, March 12th, 2009. Stephen?
This F1 Weekly podcast brought to you by Marin Karting and the 2009 Jim Russell Rotax Challenge. Check it out. You know you want to.
Thank you, Stephen. And, of course, thank you, Jim Russell Rotax Challenge and Marin Karting. On today's program, is McLaren behind or sandbagging? Braun GP, very impressive so far. Will Kimi stay awake the entire 2009 season? And of course, Motorsports Mondial with Mr. Nasser Hamid. Steve, welcome to the studio. How are you today?
Great and wonderful. How about yourself, Mr. Rogers?
Oh, I'm not too bad. I had a few bumps in the road today, but you know what? The listeners don't care about how screwed up my life is because really, we're here for Formula One news, and it's upon us pretty soon, Stephen.
It's getting there.
Saturday, March 28th. Yes, qualifying. Funky wings, big wings, little wings in the back.
Big wings, little wings. We get the whole gamut.
Yeah. So, no, I'm really, really impressed. But let's just get right to it. The big story, of course, Braun GP.
And on Ross, track.
On the track. Not only that, but today, or yesterday, topping the timesheets with Jenson Button, Rubens Barrichello doing an outstanding job yesterday. That was the first time he was in the car since Brazil 2008. So, you know what? Once again, the professionals make the right decisions, and us talking heads should just leave them alone, because really, I don't think Bruno Senna would have done so well, but I could have been wrong.
The way this car looks, maybe he would have. Coming right out of the gate, basically, what, I think Ben Button put like some hundred-something last, couple race distances and some quality practice and setup stuff, and was just flying. And, of course, everybody in the paddock, he's lying on fuel. maybe he is, but he's still outpacing everybody else.
Not only that, but people are testing all varieties of fuel levels, setups. That's why it's called testing. So really, at the end of the day, I mean, the guy was a full second clear of his rivals with a 119.127. It was unbelievable. I mean, I was very impressed. Obviously, the Mercedes package with the car that they've developed over these last 15 months, because let's not forget, Honda said that the 08 car was such a dog, they had stopped developing that and were working on the 09.
Yeah, and they've apparently gotten it, at least from these early look at it, they've gotten it right. This car is quick. He's a full second ahead of the field. Even if he is light on fuel, that's a heck of a fast car.
Yeah, and Braun himself said that his car's performance was no surprise to him, given the effort Honda had put in their 2009 program before they decided to pull out of Formula One. So I'm very impressed. I'm also very impressed with the Ferrari looked good. They seem to have, they're still having some problems with their KERS and some of the cooling issues with KERS, which I'm really not up to speed on.
Yeah, I think that's it. I believe Massa came up short today or yesterday with a hydraulic issue.
Exactly.
So they're still kind of getting the gremlins out, but they've been pretty impressive so far.
Toyota and BMW looking very strong, and of course I have to mention my hombre de España, Fernando looking pretty good. The middle of the timesheets, not outstanding, but they're testing so many things that right now, really, these times I don't think are too significant. But as the testing winds down, I think the times will be a little more significant because you're going to see pretty much the aero package that we will all witness when Melbourne comes around.
Yeah, or it's going to be pretty darn close. And then they're trying to get the last of their, you know, setup methodologies worked out and how, you know, where they're going to start at specific tracks. And, you know, what do they use as a baseline for the driver when they take it to a track. So it should be interesting to see what the timesheets show tomorrow. And again, as you mentioned in the open, a lot of the pundits are concerned about McLaren and their lack of pace.
Exactly. Let's go right to McLaren. They've done some really bizarre situations like we talked about last week with running the 2008 rear wing on several tests. Ron Dennis himself denied that this was a sign of problems. Blah, blah, blah.
That sounds more like a fabrication issue that never made up. I would be more concerned with the fact that they're not showing a lot of pace, and there seems to be a lot of concern about what they've decided to do with their floor and how they're approaching that end of the car.
Exactly, and it seems like the floor has got these cutouts towards the back wheels, and that's going to give some downforce to where they could have a smaller rear wing and less drag, meaning more speed.
Yeah, but you also sacrifice traction on the rear wheels, too, if you're trying to do that. Ideally, you can get a good balance, and apparently it doesn't seem to be working exceptionally well at the moment.
Well, Ron Dennis did say, quote, "We lost some time. We had a strategy for this year to leave it to the last possible moment to produce our aerodynamic package for the Australian Grand Prix. That in itself gave us some production challenges, and we have really only started to run the car in the last day with the Australian Aero Package," unquote. So they're a little bit behind, but as everybody knows, McLaren is a top team. They bounce back pretty quickly when they do have a problem, and I don't see them lagging behind for the first race of the season.
I'm trying to figure out why everybody's talking to Dennis when he isn't even the team principal anymore.
Because he's still Ron Dennis, and
he likes to be in front of the camera.
Well, and he's going to be around, and he said he's going to be going to the Grand Prix, so there you have it.
Good thing for the new principal, and that he doesn't have to answer the questions.
Absolutely, absolutely. Flavio came out today whining, I think more than anything else, about the legality of some of the rear diffuser designs, specifically Williams and Toyota. Charlie Whiting has looked at these diffusers, and he said that they were within legal limits. But Flavio says it's not right that some diffusers are made in a certain way while others in a different way, because I don't think it's fair that everyone has his own rule book, and I think he's just getting a little excited. But apparently it has to do with a sprung element in the rear diffuser that Toyota and Williams are using that Flavio's bickering about. And, of course, when Melbourne comes around, they can file a protest. But I think, why don't you just copy it?
Well, the other thing that comes about it, a sprung element would mean that it's a moving aerodynamic component, which is illegal by the rule book, which might be why Flavio's... And I can't see Whiting... If the thing is sprung in a aerodynamic fashion so that it, you know, maybe when it goes faster it goes down and when it's slower it goes up. I don't know, but sounds illegal to me.
Yeah, it did to me too, but Williams and, of course, Toyota are adamant that it's completely legal.
Okay, so for now, should throw the mass damper back in the car.
Exactly, but I'm pretty excited because, you know, a lot of people, Sebastian Bourdais, was saying that it's really an unpredictable season. I mean, of course, you know, if you're Kimi Raikkonen or Felipe Massa, you're for sure going to be expecting to be at the front of the spear. But people like Sebastian Vettel, Fernando Alonso, Robert Kubica, Mark Webber are expecting to shake it up, and their possibility, and Yarno truly, he is so confident, he said that this year's TF-109 is the best car that Toyota has ever produced in Formula One. Now, he's been with the team for a while, so his analysis is pretty respectable. And if
he certainly has a large sample to be choosing from, and I don't disagree. The fact that we've basically, I think I mentioned this last week, and that we've stripped, you know, all of the extra aerodynamic doohickeys off of the cars, they're a lot cleaner, and so therefore your wind tunnel time is less productive, I guess you could say, towards trimming time off of your total lap times. So that kind of levels the playing field, and the fact that if you look at this car and compare it to last year, we're talking about brand new cars all the way across the grid. This car is so completely different in so many ways from last year. And then you throw slicks into the mix, too, just for giggles. You know, throw it in the air. You know that the top teams are still going to be towards the top, but I think it's going to give the teams, particularly the people that were mid-pack and solid last season, the opportunity to maybe steal a couple races.
I think it's very possible. I see Sebastian Vettel being the man that he is and the cage-rattling dude that he is. I expect him to win some races this year. I think Red Bull expects him to win some races this year. It's not out of the realm. Also, I think Braun, GP, who's looking very sweet in testing, is going to make Force India look
slow.
And which is a sad state of affairs because when they came out with their car, the Mercedes-Benz package from McLaren probably gave them a lot of positive feelings in the paddock.
Well, it gave them a boost because, you know, it was a new power plant. They were happy with it. It was easier to fit into their car. You know, they were going to get some technical help from McLaren. And so, you know, therefore add to their knowledge base. But like you say, there's a really strong chance that it's not going to end up doing them any good, especially when you see Braun GP come out with basically the same power plant and drivetrain. And they're just tearing it up.
Not only that, but Fisichella was eighth today with a 121.545, where Jenson Button was number one with a 119.127. So I think there's probably scrambling a little bit. Force India has got to get some points.
9 seconds?
I'm sorry?
9 seconds?
2 seconds.
2 seconds. Okay.
Exactly, Stephen. We don't want to make them look that bad.
I was trying to put the numbers in the right spots.
And, of course, Hamilton had some damage, scraped the tire barrier, and he came in last. And Heikki Kovalainen, a few days ago, was at the bottom of the timesheet. The McLaren is really a dog.
It's either a dog or they're sandbagging their behinds off, but I seriously doubt that because McLaren has never been much of a team for... You know, if they're going to sandbag, they're going to sandbag, you know, like the 4-5 to the 4-5 slots, not to the back of the field.
I agree, but let me put it this way: they were 1/10 slower than the Force India of Fisichella.
Wow!
Exactly, Stephen. So that's the talk in the paddock, especially on some of the Spanish websites.
¿Dónde está McLaren?
So, I don't know, but I know some other teams that are probably cheering for this kind of happening because we get tired of the same old silver and the Ferrari Scuderia at the front. So, this could be an exciting season.
This could be a lot of fun because, especially if they actually adopt the points changes for, you know, first place being, you know, the extra 2 points over what it was last season. Could really screw up the field. You get somebody like Toyota sneaking in and getting a win here and there. Could just completely throw the whole mix into the hopper for some new ground beef.
Exactly. So we'll see what happens. And I also expect some of the rules and regulations to be not so tightly enforced because it's a new season. And when I say that, I mean that there's going to be debate between the FBI and some of the Formula One team engineers where there's going to be some flexibility where they're going to say, you know, this rule shouldn't really be this tight. It should really envelop a bigger concept when it comes to reality and racing.
Right.
Instead
kind of loosen up a little bit to get a little more competition.
We'll see what happens, but I think there's going to be some flexibility between the FIA, Charlie Whiting, and
the teams once we get into two, three, or four races as things develop.
Yeah, that's
new,
always
new
possible.
New season, new rules, new car. Lots of things are going to happen.
Can hardly wait.
And, of course, let's hope the FIA conspiracy doesn't rear its ugly head.
One can only hope.
Exactly.
See, the problem becomes is if Ferrari doesn't, you know, isn't exceptionally competitive in the first three races, then you know the FIA is going to start weaseling in there, especially if a team like Toyota is dominant. They'll go after the diffuser.
If Toyota dominates,
that will suddenly become illegal.
That diffuser is out the door for sure, because Flavio is going to talk to Ferrari. I mean, he is Italian after all.
Yeah, he'll just give up his buddy Montezemolo's, you know, a phone call and go, "Hey,
what's some out of you?
let's get these taken care of."
Yeah, so we'll see what happens. So anyway, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with Motorsports Mondial after this brief message.
Hi, this is Alexander Rossi, 2008 Formula BMW America's and World Final Champion, and you're listening to F1Weekly.com.
And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and Mr. Nasser Hamid. Nass, welcome to the studio. How are you this evening?
Very good, sir. Thank you. Mint tea on arrival. Thank you, Mr. Faub.
I like the little waitress that brings you the tea.
Oh, she must be a phantom waitress. I haven't seen her yet. But I like the tea in the Starbucks coffee.
Good for you, Nass. You know, we pay extra to get that to you.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. Shall we start? Shall we begin the begin?
The violin section is about to pick up.
Okay. Greetings and racing regards from California to Curitiba. And that's where we go for item numero uno, opening round of the World Touring Car Championship. Race one, Seat Cars took the first four positions. Winner from pole position was series champion Ivan Muller. Jordi Genet, brother of Marc Genet, was second. Rickard Riedel, who was from Sweden, was third, and Gabriel Tarquini from Italy was fourth. First non-Seat car was Chevrolet of Nicola Larini, another ex-F1 driver. Alex Zanardi was 12th in his BMW. Race 2, in the rain saw another Seat sweep. Spanish manufacturer taking top 4 slots. This time Tarquini was the winner, followed by Riedel, Genet and Muller. Round 2 is in Puebla, Mexico in 2 weeks, and this race in Puebla, Mexico will also be featuring an opening round of the Formula BMW America, so I'm looking forward to it also.
We should go to that one day.
Puebla is a nice little try.
You've been there?
No, sir, I've never been to Mexico, but I was planning to go to this A1 GP race, which was clashing with Sebring, but fate intervened and that race has been cancelled.
Exactly.
But the old Hermanos Rodriguez circuit, previously known as Michoacán, is one of my very, very favorite racing tracks.
Of course. Love
the long straight.
I think Nigel Mansell is involved somewhere.
Nigel Mansell, man, what a pass he made on Gerhard Berger. That was the best ever. Driver signings. A lot of drivers' seats are being filled, being confirmed. Some being dethroned, you know, typical part of racing life. Brendan Hartley, the Mr. Tom Petty of New Zealand.
One of the people that you've been following, the young guns of motorsports.
Yeah, and you know, I hate to say this, not all of them are going to make it, and it will not be because of their talent, time and circumstances and fate and this and that. Sometimes chip on the shoulder also creates problem.
But they have a better chance if they know you, I know that for sure.
They know me? Wow, must be my lucky day. But anyway, Brendan Hartley from New Zealand has been confirmed as the reserve driver for both Red Bull-owned teams, which means sayonara to Sato San's F1 dreams. Hartley will also compete in the F3 Euro Series this year and is hoping to become the first Kiwi in GP since Mike Tekwell's very brief F1 career, which I believe was in the 1980 Canadian Grand Prix. And Mike Tekwell's story is a very interesting story of how a very promising career can basically end up with nothing. So if anybody wants to do a Google or Yahoo search, please do so. Quite an interesting story.
Maybe we could touch that one day in moments in motorsports history.
I would love to, because, you know, he walked away from motor racing when he was 26 years old. He made his Grand Prix debut when he was 19. Very interesting story. Kind of like the this crash and burn, Tommy Byrne story. Next is Luca Filippi. the guy who flipped out because of Romain Grosjean last year. Italian, that's what happened.
I believe you. Yeah. I just hate to see people flip out.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially Mr. Filippi.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay, Italian driver will join Spaniard Javier Villa at Supernova for the GP2 series. Luca was at ART last year but left before the season was over because his cage was rattled by Romain Grosjean. And he claimed that the French team was, you know, favoring the French driver and Grosjean.
There's always that kind of bickering. It's so
always,
typical.
Yeah, always. Luca is pretty quick, but, you know, it's one of those things. You may be very quick, but if you're paired with Sebastian Vettel, you got problems. You know, see how been Zorgen.
I want to see Sebastian Vettel get a sponsorship with Vettel.
That'll be very nice.
Wouldn't it?
I have a feeling that if his package is competitive, competitive and reliable, he could have a... He has a good shot of, I don't know, if he can become world champion. He can. I mean, he has the talents. All he needs is
he'll be world
le package this year.
Fernando will have a couple more and then Vettel will step in.
Who? Oh, yeah, yeah. That's,
you know, the Spanish dude.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've heard of him. Alvaro Parent, also known as Alvaro Parente, Portuguese driver, will also compete in GP2 with Ocean Racing Technology. Team is owned by his homeboy, Thiago Monteiro. His teammate will be the Indian driver, Karun Chandok. Last year, Parent won the opening race of the 2008 GP2 season in Barcelona. Well, remember when... James Hunt has a famous interview, him talking about him and Lord Hesketh racing in Formula 2. And they did like four races and crashed, and like three of them did not finish the fourth one. So his famous line was that since we were not winning in Formula 2, we decided to move to Formula 1. So Greg Mansell looks like he's on the same program.
Well, that's not a bad program. I had a lot of respect for the Hesketh program. The champagne, the girls... Giggling.
Yeah. So Greg Mansell did not win in Formula BMW, so he moved up to Formula 3. Did not win there, so he came here in Atlantic. That didn't work out. So now he's going to race in World Series by Renault with Ultimate Signature Team. And last year he was 10th in the Atlantic Championship here in the U.S.
And I think he could do very well because now he's finally got quite a bit of experience under his belt. I mean, I know he gets a little distracted by the little birds flying by and stuff. But I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. And I think I'm rooting for Greg this year.
Yeah, me too. The problem is, you know, no matter what series you go to, whether it's here in the U.S., Australia, Japan, America, wherever, 80-90% of the drivers you can handle if you're good. But like, you know, in World Series by Renault this year, they have Jaime Alguersuari, who won the British F3 in his first attempt. So he may rattle Mansell's cage. There's no question about it. So that's what it is. Okay, check this out. Harold, and this is what I like about the new world of motor racing. Drivers coming, like, you know, I was mentioning Formula BMW Americas. I just read that there's a kid also signed up. He's from the Dominican Republic. So apparently they do more than baseball there, which is good. Okay, there is a gentleman from Latvia. Harold Schlegelmilch, no relation to the photographer.
Of course.
You know.
The machismo photographer.
Yeah, exactly. Rainer Schlegelmilch from Germania. Harold is from Latvia, and he will compete in this year's Formula Atlantic with Conquest Racing. James Hinchcliffe, who is another of those many, many talented Canadian drivers, also known as the mayor of Hinchtown, will race in Indy Lights with Sam Schmidt's team. So we wish him well. He's a pretty good driver, no question about it. And we interviewed him, I think, a couple of years ago at the San Jose Grand Prix.
I remember.
Now we come to Mr. Rogers' favorite series.
Le NASCAR.
Very good. Sounds like you just had a hot dog.
Yeah, I did.
The garlic flavor.
Thank you.
Welcome. Oh, this was in Atlanta, so maybe it was with chopped Vidalia onions.
It could have been.
Sure. Cup race in Atlanta was won by Kurt Busch in his Penske Racing Dodge. Jeff Gordon was second in a Chevrolet, and Carl Edwards was third for the Blue Oval. Monty was 27th and Scott Speed 35th. Now check this out. Talking of NASCAR, reports are that Mitch Daniels, and these are published reports, I'm not making them up. Reports are that Ms. Danica Patrick has signed with IMG, International Management Group. These are the people who wrote the book on personal endorsements. And in 2010, they will take what Billy Idol calls Flash for Fantasy to NASCAR Nation. Question is, do you like the music?
I like the music, but I think it'd be sad if she goes to NASCAR and she'd be doing it just for the money. I mean, look where...
She works hard for the money.
I know. But still, I mean, look where Juan Pablo Montoya is. Like you said, he was 27th.
Or take another example of someone making a jump from open wheel into NASCAR, A.J. Allmendinger, who has got lucky at Daytona, but has been back in the field.
Yeah, Dario Franchitti back to open wheel because he realized those fenders were really annoying.
Yeah. Now we come to the Bobby Fuller segment. Elio Castro Neves' trial continues in Florida on tax evasion charges. Looks like we may have a verdict one way or the other before Indy 500, which is coming up on Memorial Day in May. Let's hope Judge Carnegie does not announce, "It's a new jail record. He's in it." And you know, there is this website. I do not subscribe to it, and you have to read it if you subscribe. Auto Racing One. And apparently, they have a lot of contacts. They know a lot of inside information. On their website, I was looking today on the headlines you can read. It says that 90% chance that Castro Neves will be found guilty, which is very sad.
That's terrible.
And if that happens, his butte is out of the USA.
You don't think he'll serve any prison time? They'll just deport him?
No, I think he will have to serve time, and then what's it?
That's brutal.
Yeah.
Because he's not one to... He's not going to last long in prison. I've seen him.
Yeah, and if you do a, why do you say that?
Huh? What?
He'll be dancing with the bars.
I didn't say. I'm just saying what I thought. Prison's a tough place.
Is this from experience, Mr.
No,
Rogers?
No. But I've known a few prisoners in my time.
Oh my God. Okay, blast from the past. Okay, this is a race report from July 18, 2005. You know, every now and then I'm trying to research something.
A little historical perspective, perhaps?
And a couple of personal thoughts I would like to mention here. One of them is what I would call, on a clear day, you can see GM bankruptcy. Among the things, remember that book?
Yeah, it's one of my favorite books.
Yeah.
Besides mine.
Yeah, what is your book called?
You know what my book's called. I don't like to plug myself, Nasser.
Me.
Me
the
and,
real
me
story.
And, me and the mirror. Forward by me. Recommended by me. Great. Okay. Now, what is happening here? There's a lot of report coming out, and who knows what's going to happen. They're saying that one of the requirements, if the government is to build, you know, these people, automakers, have received close to $17-18 billion. Already, they want another 20 plus. They're simple, you know.
Well, once you give an inch, they're going to take a mile.
But at least this time they are carpooling to when they come to D.C. in their, you know, Yukon Denali or something like that.
Exactly. They're driving some big gas guzzler.
Yeah, but...
F-350 pickup truck.
Exactly. And what I'm reading is that the government may ask them, hey, cut out your racing program, which will be pretty bad, you know. And it will be very hard to convince anybody who is not interested in motor racing that we sell cars when we run Daytona.
Yeah, and but I think the government also sees the relationship between, well, let's say NASCAR and General Motors and the fan base and those potential future customers. They would be shooting themselves in the foot, really, don't you?
No, I don't buy that argument because, you know, all you have to do is look at the sales trend of GM versus Toyota and Honda. So that really, you cannot say that, you know, if we win, we're going to sell on Monday.
So, I was going to say the win on Sunday.
Those days are gone.
Yeah, but you also, government officials are going to risk taking a hit from voters. You know, NASCAR Nation's pretty big.
Oh, yeah.
And there are a lot of senators and congressmen who owe their seats to NASCAR fans.
Yeah, they might bring back George Bush. They're so big.
Well, you force GM and Dodge and Ford to pull out of NASCAR, basically killing NASCAR. Those people aren't going to be very happy and aren't going to work to vote you out of office.
Well, these people really, the only thing they're curious about right now is keeping their own jobs.
Absolutely.
And I have to admit... NASCAR fans don't necessarily drive what they watch because I was at Indianapolis one year and I was staying a little bit out of town.
You mean for the Brickyard 400?
No, I was there for the United States Grand Prix Formule 1. And lo and behold, you wouldn't believe what car I saw with the front license plate was NASCAR.
Lexus?
No, it was a Peugeot.
Well, I have new, I have better news for you.
And you didn't photograph that?
I have better news for you. You know, some months ago, Bill Franz Jr. was pulled over for, I don't know what, DUI or whatever small traffic offense was. Guess what he was driving?
A 1969 Citroen DS21?
No. Lexus.
But of course, he wanted quality.
So there you have it. Okay, anyway, so I came across this website called www.whowon.com, and they provide a lot of race data, information, race reports, and I've been there many times before. And this was a race report from July 18th, 2005, and it caught my attention, and season is coming up. It's a little tribute to the new world champion.
Fernando? Oh, no, the other guy, Lewis Hamilton. Yes. What was I thinking?
Well, now that you brought up Fernando, I'm going to bring his name again after this report. Anyhow, this is what it says here. Again, it's from July 18, 2005. This is part of the report. Lewis Hamilton won both races of the sixth event of the 2005 Formula 3 Euro Series at Nürburgring, which would be near Nuremberg. On Saturday, Hamilton won ahead of Sebastian Vettel and Paul di Resta. On Sunday, Hamilton won ahead of Adrian Sutil. And this was my favorite part. Hamilton, with 9 victories, leads the championship with 108 points. Second is Sutil with 65 points. And is it any wonder that Lewis Hamilton is world champion in his second year in Formula One and came almost close to winning first time out?
Almost doesn't count except in horseshoes.
That is very true.
Hand grenades and having babies.
And talking about Fernando Alonso, I believe it's on the forum. Somebody posted Forza Minardi in Switzerland, an interview that
Ron Dennis
gave to a Swiss football magazine.
You mean showing his bitterness and deep resentment inside?
No.
Fernando was offered the olive leaf, the olive branch, excusez-moi.
No, all he's saying is that, you know, in our team, Steve, have you read that?
No.
Let me get your take on this. And again, you know, this is what's reported. This is what he's quoted as saying. What the truth is, I really don't know. But let's just say, based on these comments. Ron Dennis is saying that in our team, we not only promote equality between drivers, but we also promote that they race each other. And he said that what happened in 2007 is that Alonso found a situation where somebody was, you know, as good as him or faster than him on occasions, and instead of competing with the guy, which happens to be his teammate, he resorted to tactics to take an unfair advantage, which were not acceptable. And
I have one thing to say.
It's called cage rattling. That's all that happened.
Okay, all I have is one thing to say.
2 times world champion.
We'll see. No. See, I'm open-minded like Mr. Fogg.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We'll see what Heikki Kovalainen has to say around June or July.
You know what? This is what he has to say.
You're going to predict?
No. I don't know. I'll look back.
Thank you for the new contract.
I'll
be back next year.
I'm glad to be number two.
I'm sure he gets a season review of the DVD of the season review. Please watch the first lap and the last lap of the 2008 Italian Grand Prix. This is your life.
Where you don't try.
You saw it.
And Vettel does.
I mean, you know, think, when something like that happens, I mean, it's just like that, you know, Ayrton Senna driving a Tolman in 84 in the rain at Monaco closes a 25-second gap to Alain Prost and the McLaren. Come on, I mean, you know, that's...
What's your point? You're telling me Alain Prost was not a good race car driver?
I never said that. He was a victim of cage rattling also.
You're never going to get that interview, NASA.
Yeah. But another personal thought I would like to share. You know, a good point you make, you're never going to get that interview. I've thought about comments we make here. You know, we don't want to become such wuss and, pussycats.
Yeah. That's true, where we're so afraid to step on toes because we're trying to get an interview here.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be detrimental to the listeners, really.
Yeah, that's why you and I and Mr. Fab is always smiling no matter if we have digital slings and arrows or red roses for a blue gentleman here. We invite people to express their opinion. You know, if it does not jive with what we say or what we like, it's okay. I mean,
I agree. I mean, most people know my opinion, so.
Reno, Fernando.
There you go. It keeps it simple.
No, there's another personal thought I wanted to share with you, and it really made me feel very bad about the whole the IndyCar split in America. Again, I was doing some research. Actually, what I was doing when we did the segment, you know, American First, connection between America and Formula One. So I was looking at some results of Indy 500 and some IndyCar races from the 50s. And I saw this name, Bobby Ball, who was a racing driver. I believe he's from Southern California, was killed in a race. And many years ago, 20, 30 years ago, when IndyCar was very big, and they used to have races named after racing drivers, especially drivers who were killed in racing, which I thought was a very nice tribute. There was a Jimmy Bryan 200 or 250, Rex Mays 300. I think they even had a race after Bobby Ball. And I said, you know, for all this rich history, I mean, Indy track was built in 11, race started much before Le Mans, track was built much before Monza. I mean, this is serious, serious history, racing, tradition, the drinking of milk. And I don't want to blame one person, Tony George, for all the problems, but basically a decision by one person has totally screwed the series. And I used to think Dan Gurney, a time will prove him wrong, when he said that the series will never get back to where it used to be. And now when you read in newspapers and websites that IndyCar may fold up in a year or two, it's just very, very sad.
It is.
And this is from somebody who follows Formula One.
Of course.
And you can imagine how the Bobby Unsers and people who have given their life to IndyCar racing, the Robin Millers and fans, not just racing drivers, you know, how they feel. They got to be very upset about this whole thing.
I agree. And especially Indianapolis, I believe they're celebrating their centennial this year. So,
I mean, to read that Indy 500 might become a NASCAR race, something has gone terribly wrong. That's what it was in the... You know, one of the people was saying.
Well, actually, if you really want to push it, you could look at that split as the decline of Formula One in America. That basically led to Bernie being willing to pull out of America because open wheelie racing has fallen so far that the fan base isn't there to really support Formula One.
There you have it, Nasser. Thank you for another outstanding motorsports mondial, and of course, a little personal thoughts at the end. Thank you very much, Ness. We'll be back in 60 seconds.
Hi, I'm Clark Rogers, host of F1Weekly.com's podcast. Please visit our website, F1Weekly.com, your fresh new destination for all your Formula One needs. F1Weekly.com brings you a weekly podcast that covers the latest news, rumors, and insightful commentary related to the pinnacle of modern motorsports, Formula One. You can find us on iTunes and other popular podcast locations. F1Weekly.com. Thank you.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. I want to remind our listeners that we have a very special edition of the Season in Review 2008, which will be our next podcast. And please stay tuned for that. Also, we have a special interview with one of our great listeners and a forum member, Mr. Carlos Calderon. Keep up the good work, Nass. Great questions, I'm sure.
Okay, folks, we're in the parking lot of Starbucks in beautiful Santa Clara, California. And with me is Carlos Calderon, one of our original and faithful, loyal listeners. Carlos, welcome to F1 Weekly. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Okay, first of all, how and when did you find F1 Weekly?
You know, I really don't know. I guess when I was looking for podcasts through iTunes, just happened to find you guys when searching for Formula One.
And are you glad you found us?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Your interviews have been priceless for me.
Oh, thank you. I always appreciate a nice plug. Okay, what is your story regards to motor racing? Tell us a little bit about yourself. What part of the country are you from? And I always ask American racing fans, what got you interested in racing where cars are turning right and left?
I'm from Southern California. Currently live in Northern California. I went to school at Illinois. I was a computer science major, and that's what took me out to Illinois. When I was in college, I started autocrossing. I got pretty involved in that, and then from there, Moved out to out here to Northern California. Started doing a little bit more autocrossing, track days, things like that. Got involved racing a couple of cars. A lot of indoor karting at the time as well. That's about all the budget could afford. And then got involved with outdoor karting, and I've been outdoor karting ever since.
Well, you should start a wind tunnel and you'll get big sponsors.
Yeah.
Your thoughts on this USF one? How excited are you about this program, and what do you see? Where do you see this program going in the absence of a major sponsor?
I'm really excited about USF one. I really hope that it succeeds. I'm a little skeptical that that it will, for various reasons. The biggest reason, of course, is sponsorship. I really hope that they do well. I don't know what's going to happen, but of course, I can only hope for the best.
Now, did you watch the press conference they had, and what was your reaction after listening to these two people, Ken Anderson and Peter Windsor?
My first reaction was it was a little too produced. It felt really more like a commercial than a real sports press conference. And it was more fluff than real information, I thought. I wish they would have given more details in terms of sponsorship and driver signings or who they were really hoping to get, what their real intentions are, those types of things.
Now, you are involved in karting yourself, and you are working with the Rotax series, and tell us a little bit about that, and how long is the series and the season that is, and what is the excitement for you racing in karts?
So I currently race in the NorCal Rotax Challenge. It runs a couple of races it runs 10 races for the whole season. Most of them are at Infineon Raceway in Sonoma, California, and then there's a few races at Dixon. And the excitement for outdoor karting is just that it's, like many have said, the purest form of racing. It's real wheel-to-wheel racing, and the competition is extraordinary. I mean, maybe it's a comment on my ability, but I've never had to work so hard for such little results. I mean, everybody in my class especially, it just is incredibly quick. We have a field separated by less than a second in many races. So you're working with tenths of a second to get by somebody. That in itself is the reason why outdoor karting is so exciting.
No, Sears Point track, I've been going there for 20 years. Very nice track, but I know they have a lot of configurations they can use. How big is the configuration or the layout that they use for Rotax series?
We run on the kart track that's actually up above the normal track. If you enter the main gate at Infineon, it's up to the left, and it's usually open for anybody to come and watch. So if anybody's interested in coming to watch any of the races, NorCalRotax.com has the schedule, and it's usually free to come watch. The track is 3/4 mile long, and they have 4 different configurations. Essentially 2, but you can run each of them backwards. So it offers a lot of variety.
So if you were to take the series you are in and compare it with the Formula One grid of last year, what Formula One driver are you? Which is a question on Facebook also.
That's a really difficult one. I hadn't never thought of that.
Let me put it this way. Are you a cage rattler or somebody's rattling your cage?
Oh, other people are definitely rattling my cage, that's for sure. I like to think of myself as a cage rattler, but that's not realistic. Maybe I'd be of last year, maybe a Bourdais who every once in a while shows some promise as a driver, but makes too many mistakes to really put it all together to get a really good finish.
And you've been signed for 2009?
My sponsor has increased my budget this year, but I'm not sure that's going to help. My my sponsor also has given me many chores at home to fulfill my sponsorship deal. So we'll see how that goes.
Okay, well, keep your sponsor happy. It's very important. Okay, now, when you go, a lot of young drivers have come out in the recent years from Northern California. You know, Rossi was racing and karting here, and our friend Troy Castaneda. Do you know these kids from racing? What is your take on them as racers, and are there some other talent that we should look for?
I know Troy pretty well. Rossi comes from the same sort of series that I race in. I don't know him personally, but Troy is a fantastic person, just an extraordinary person. Extremely good racing talent, especially in karts. Of course, I've never raced against him in cars. I've seen him race in the Jim Russell series, and he did quite well. But in karts, he was unbelievably quick. As far as upcoming talent, there's kids all the time that are coming up. The champion of last year in my particular series, or rather my class, Gregory Lefouget, he's quite good, very, very good, and he's moving to cars this year, and so we expect to see him do quite well. I think he'll be in the Jim Russell series, so hopefully he'll do really well. As far as younger, or rather, let me continue with my class. There's drivers like Nikola Radosavljevic, Jake Mota. There's various other drivers that are really quite good in karting, and I think that they have ambition to go into cars, and we'll see where they go and. I expect them to do quite well as well. There's some junior drivers that are moving into our class, names like Jordan Jadala and Jordan Miller, who were very good in our junior series, and I'm actually a bit disappointed that they're moving up because they might take a grid spot in front of me.
Okay, now you mentioned the Formula Jim Russell series. Can you tell our listeners and also moi a little bit about the series? How big is the car, and whatever you can, what you know about the series, please?
Yeah, the Jim Russell Formula Car series has been around for a while. Within the last couple of years, or rather last year, at the beginning of last year, they changed cars. They changed formula. They used to have a winged car. It was white. It was an aluminum chassis, space age frame type stuff. That was your typical, 2000 cc type thing. I don't know exactly how big the engine was, but it was a nice little starter formula. Last year they changed cars, and it's a full carbon fiber chassis, fully adjustable, lots of downforce. It really resembles more like an F3 car this year, or last year rather. So that's a big step up for whoever was driving those types of cars last year and this year. I think it's an 8-race series. It's a development series for young drivers. They have the opportunity sort of to, race in a real spec series and compete against really good drivers. Many of them come from all over California. It's pretty exciting, and we've seen a lot of good drivers come through there. There's Scott Speed was in there, Pat Barrett, J.R. Hildebrand, Nick LeDuc, who was the winner last year, is also very good and hoping to continue. Troy Castaneda was in there, Caleb Kinney, who raced the VW TDI series. There's been quite a few drivers.
Sounds like a pretty serious race car then. Would you know what the approximate budget is for a series like this?
Unfortunately, I don't. If I had to guess, it's probably around $60,000-$80,000 for the entire year. But that's, of course, just a guess.
And it's like an arrive and drive kind of series.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you get a car and each weekend, and a mechanic, and you work on your car. But there's damage waiver, of course. If you damage your car, then you have to pay for it. But it's pretty much arrive and drive, yeah.
And this series, is it the type of car they are using? Is this only for this series here at Sears Point, or they're doing this nationwide?
No, this one is just the Jim Russell series, just at Infineon. They run all 8 races at Infineon. And I think they do multiple configurations. There's a couple of different configurations for the road cars at Infineon. But yeah, it's just only at Infineon.
Is there any temptation for you to get a budget from your sponsor and maybe do a race there?
Of course there's temptation, but definitely the sponsor says that she doesn't have any money for that. So I doubt that would ever happen.
Okay. Now, going to Formula One, you know, of course, our F1 Weekly is mostly centered on Formula One. What is your first connection to Formula One in terms of knowing what the series was? How did you find Formula One?
It was a while ago. I'd always been interested in racing. My first memories of auto racing, you know, in terms of professionally, was... my mother worked for a company who was a sponsor of a kart team back in the 80s, and she took me.
We like people who drop names.
it was actually a grocery company that my mom used to work for. She worked in the office of a grocery company. It was I think it was Ralph's at the time. I don't remember.
And they, are we talking Richie Hearn?
You know, I don't remember who the driver was. It may have been Richie Hearn. But she took me to go. We got free tickets to go to Long Beach, and we went there for many years. Of course, I was quite young, so that's why I don't remember the driver. Every year we used to go to Long Beach, and since then, I've always been involved in motor racing. As far as Formula One, I don't know. I just, you know, getting more involved with auto racing when I... started racing myself, and that was, of course, the pinnacle. It still is, and naturally gravitated toward it, I guess.
So, what's your? And the years. Tell us how long you've been following Formula One, and obviously, you know, sport has really changed a lot, especially in the last 12 months. But from the days you have been watching, what are you know, races and drivers, and you know. What are the events that come to mind if somebody was to ask you, hey, what has happened in Formula One? And I'm not talking about the recent past season. Tell us about your motorsports memories.
As far as drivers, I've always been a JP Montoya fan. My mother is Colombian, and so I gravitated towards him early on. And I really liked his attitude, you know, taking it to Schumacher in his first or second race was really quite exciting to see that. I don't consider myself to have an attitude quite like Montoya, so maybe that difference in attitude both on and off the track appealed to me. Other motorsports memories, it's hard to recall at the moment, but...
Drivers you like or drivers you don't like? Let's hear some names.
For the past...
Let me ask you a question. I asked Matt Bishop, and he was very glad to answer this question. Who are the guys you like, and the good guys and the buttheads?
I'm a big Nigel Mansell fan. You know, the 11-second out qualify at Watkins Glen was... is always something that stands out in my mind, and of course, I like the drivers that have that American connection. Mansell did, and JP did, of course. Alex Zanardi, I'm a big fan of his. I wasn't really a big fan until after his accident, and just you know, his whole mindset really turned me on to him, and I became a big fan. Let's see. Of course, Andretti. I was always a big Mario Andretti fan. Of course, I never got to see him race in Formula One, but you know, I always enjoyed his stories.
Now, what about the recent mega names like the Alonso's, Schumacher, Raikkonen, and Hamilton? Give me your take. Let's start with Mikhail. Were you watching when Senna was racing, and your take on him, please?
I wasn't watching regularly. I'd catch a few races every now and then. But of course, Senna was an amazing driver from everything that I've seen and read. I've read extensively on drivers in terms of biographies. That's my favorite topic is F1 driver biographies. So I've read quite a lot about Senna, and I really like him. Schumacher, I think he's a great driver, but it might surprise people to know that I think that Schumacher might be overrated in the sense that he was always in a good car. Even when he stepped into Formula One at Benetton, he had the Ford DFV, I think that was the name of the engine, and it was a super fast engine right out of the box. And so he, even at Benetton, he was in a great car, and he never had to fight for really positions. He was always up front. He only had to fight the front guys, which is still very difficult. Don't get me wrong, amazing driver, but maybe a bit overrated. Drivers that maybe I don't like. I'm not such a big fan of Alonso. I'm not a huge Hamilton fan, but that whole situation really turned me off more to Alonso. Turned me off more to Alonso than to Hamilton. But I don't really appreciate either of them just because of the situation. It was fun to watch. It reminded me of Senna and Prost and Mansell, and those are great stories.
I love cage rattling. Let me ask you a question. As a racing fan, what is your take on what happened there? How do you think it should have been handled by Ron Dennis or the team? What do you think should have happened there?
It's difficult to say. Ron Dennis probably should have been more forceful in telling them that they needed to keep it in-house and telling them that they weren't allowed to say anything outside. Of course, these are professional drivers, and they all have egos, and they all want to say something, and that's part of Formula One, is getting into your teammate's head. Unfortunately, that's how it works. Of course, they should have kept it in-house. Maybe Ron should have appointed somebody number one said, this is how things are going to be, whether you like them or not. He left it a bit too open, in my opinion. It's nice to think about to say that you want to have open competition all the time, and I'm a bit contradictory in saying it's unfortunate that you have to fight your teammate, and at the same time I'm saying Ron Dennis should have picked one of them. It's difficult to say. It's a bad situation all around. Just like Senna and Prost, they're fighting, and they will do anything to get ahead, and the teammate's always the first guy to take the brunt of that aggression.
Let me ask you a question that people ask on the forum. What other websites you go to for racing information, and what's your favorite websites?
My favorite website is NorCalRotax.com because I get all the racing info there. I also like the eCartingNews.com that has a lot of information on there. In terms of, karting and what I'm interested in. Autosport.com is probably my next source of information. I use RSS feeds a lot, so I get information that way. F1 Weekly, listen to the podcast every week, and I get a lot of information that way.
Fair enough. Do you read a lot of magazines?
I don't, unfortunately, because it just doesn't really fit my lifestyle very much. I don't have time. I read Racer pretty much every issue, but other than that, not really. I just, there's not really a whole lot of good racing magazines that come to the U.S. You get some of the European ones, but it's either expensive or they take too long to get here, and it's difficult. So, internet is usually the best way to get that sort of information.
I can recommend one good magazine.
Yeah, what's that?
NASCAR Illustrated.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I'm not really into NASCAR. I used to despise NASCAR, actually. I used to hate it. Really, really dislike NASCAR. But throughout the years, I've realized that NASCAR fills a certain part of my life that other racing can't. They race all year round. They have, probably a couple of days of off season. And so they're racing in February, and they're racing in November. And so it's, you know, it's racing when there's nothing else to watch. So it's not terribly bad. And they're racing every weekend. So between F1 races and GP2 races and any other series that I'm watching, it fills a hole. You know, when I can't watch any other racing, I might as well watch the guys go roundy round.
Well, there's a lot of yellow in the Colombian national flag, so you must love the cautions.
No, I hate the cautions. That's the one thing that I hate is the competition caution. I hate that.
Okay, talking of drivers, let me ask you a question. You were talking while you were having Starbucks coffee, who, by the way, do not sponsor this podcast. And you were talking about Americans in European racing scene. Who do you think can make it? What should be done? Is there any hope to have a Formula One driver from the U.S. in the near future?
The Wizard Windsor's comments on driver, or maybe this was Ken Anderson, drivers in Europe that we don't really know about. There's not many, very few, in fact. But drivers that I think that would be good for Formula One, US F1 in particular, I think Summerton would be fantastic. I think he's an amazing racing talent. Rossi is quite good. It's still to be seen, you know, how good he is in terms of other competition, you know, good, really, really good, solid competition. You know, Summerton had the A1GP showings that were fabulous. So that put a little bit of credit to his racing resume. John Edwards is another great talent. And there's some younger drivers that are coming up that I think would be very good. You know, still to be seen, but names like Newgarden and Daly and Dane Cameron. I'm not sure if he's still looking to go open wheel or not, but he's quite good as well. I saw Dane Cameron race here in Northern California, and he's very good.
Yeah, Dane Cameron is very good. He did very well, and he was in Atlantics last year. Mm-hmm. And it's, of course, Papito and Uncle. It's a complete racing family. Okay, moving forward to the season that's coming up. Are you a big tech? I'm zero on technical matters. Do you take a lot of interest in the technical stuff of Formula One, of race cars?
Yeah, I do. I enjoy it. Of course, I don't know every detail, but as much as I can get my hands on, you know, out of all the commentators on Speed, Steve Matchett is definitely my favorite because of his technical expertise. So I, you know, every time I get some info, I enjoy reading about it.
Now, what's your take on the season? Of course, brand new cars and all this kind of stuff. Who do you think will be the cage rattler of the year this year?
Cage rattler of the year. In terms of teams, I think Williams is actually poised to do quite well. It might surprise people to hear that. You know, that they've fallen on really hard times recently. But I think that this year they've got a lot of really smart people over there, and I think they'll do well. I think Red Bull is also poised to do very well. In terms of drivers, I think Vettel, of course, is poised to do quite well and rattle some cages. I don't expect him to do particularly better than Mark Webber. I think Mark Webber is a fantastic driver, and I think he'll follow him step for step. Other drivers that might rattle some cages. I have always been a huge Heikki Kovalainen fan, and I still expect him to do quite well. I still think he's a really good driver, and I hope he does really well this year. And you know, he got the short end of the stick in terms of strategy from McLaren last year. Maybe that changes this year. I doubt it, but maybe it does. And if it does, I think he will do very well.
Now, what do you think Williams will do well? I mean, Red Bull, I can understand they got Adrian Newey. No guarantees that the car will be very competitive. What makes you think that Williams will do good? Are you a big Kazuki Nakajima fan?
I'm not necessarily a huge Nakajima fan. I don't think he's a bad driver, but you know, he's not going to change the world. You know, I think Nico Rosberg's very good. I think the main reason they'll do well is because of the regulation changes. I think they have had the whole winter to work on all these new rule changes and develop a car that that you don't necessarily need a lot of money to develop. It gives them the opportunity to use to start from the same level as a McLaren and a Ferrari and work up. Of course, as the year goes on, they might fall off as compared to the others because they won't be able to develop as quickly. But I think starting out the year, I think they probably will do pretty well. You know, evidence of their diffuser. You know, they've already taken a step and done sort of what I thought they would, which was, you know, develop a good car from scratch.
Okay, you mentioned Heikki Kovalainen. You know, I followed his career when he was in World Series by Renault, won the championship. He was going to be a runaway champion in GP2 till Nico Rosberg rattled his cage in the late stages of the season, and he finished second, which is still very good, and I think he's a very good driver. I want to ask you something. What happened to him in the Italian Grand Prix last year?
I don't know. He got his own cage rattled, I guess. I don't know. Who knows? He's a very, very good driver, and unfortunately, he made some mistakes and didn't bring it home.
You know, I watched that race again, and it's amazing. You know, you're on the front row. He never even made a fake pass attempt. So, of course, you cannot judge a career by one race. But that race, for me as a racing fan, really spoke the told me the difference between him and Sebastian Vettel. You haven't said anything about Lewis Hamilton or Fernando Alonso or Massa. And in talking of Massa, tell me, what was your thought about when the final lap started last year in Brazil? Who do you think was world champion?
Oh, I absolutely thought Massa was world champion. In fact, when I watch on Speed TV here in the U.S., and when the announcers said that it was Timo Glock that Hamilton had just passed, it didn't quite register with me. I had to rewind right then and there and listen to it again, and it was just so surprising to me that Timo Glock was even that close, or rather Lewis Hamilton was that close to Timo Glock. I thought Timo had already passed the line. Yeah. I guess I hadn't realized, you know, what corner they were at in terms of the finish line. I, you know, saw Massa cross the line, and that was pretty much it for me. I thought that was it. And that may be the most amazing scene I've seen in Formula One with Massa's family celebrating, and then it just the look on their face was just incredible. Just you could see the joy run from their face when they were told that they didn't win.
You know, I just like you, I could not believe. I thought the Toyota he passed was Yarno Trulli, and I thought it was over. I mean, I thought again, here we go, Lewis screws up again in the last race. I could not believe it, and I was convinced it was Yarno Trulli. And so I had the ITV, you know, feed going on also, so I run to the computer, and Speed TV is, I think, a minute or two behind. So I got all excited because they were talking about Massa, what a great race. So I called my friend, and I says, hey, who is the world champion? And he goes, I guess it's Hamilton. I says, no, not guess. Who is the champion? And he says, I'm not sure. So then I had to, you know, rewind also. But, you know, that scene of his family celebrating, his dad and all those people there, and then Pussycat Doll putting a scratch on their smile, that was a heartbreaker, even though I wanted to see Hamilton win. But I would have been, you know, almost equally happy if Massa had won, because the way he was going to win was very, very commendable. It's pretty much like Kimi Raikkonen, and I have also never seen anything like that. What do you think will happen between Hamilton, Alonso, and Massa in 2009?
Yeah, I think Alonso's going to mix it up this year as well. In terms of Massa, I really had I was down on Massa early on the year last year, especially after Silverstone. I wrote him off entirely. I thought this guy can't drive. I mean, he's terrible. It was just the small types of driving errors he was making at Silverstone were inexcusable, I thought. And I'll come to find out that he probably had a really bad setup, even though he said he did. It was probably quite bad, and later in the year, he won me over, especially after the last race where he was really, really quite classy in his loss. That doesn't make him a good driver, it just makes him a good person. But it still makes me really like him. In terms of the championship and his driving ability, I think he'll again do very well, but I think he will continue to make the types of mistakes that he made in Silverstone and throughout the year, which were small mistakes that cost him big. And, you know, in terms of great driving talent, it's the small mistakes that set you apart. It's your consistency that will win you world championships. And so I think Hamilton has a huge advantage. I think Raikkonen also has a huge advantage, though he also makes the mistakes that keep him from being consistent as well. But I think that Raikkonen has such raw speed that he may be able to make up for it. Of course, they both have great cars. Alonso has the consistency that none of them really have. Alonso makes very few mistakes, I think. He's also quite aggressive, and that may also put him over the edge. Unfortunately, I don't think that they're going to have the same car as McLaren and Ferrari, and that Renault livery might slow him down a second or two.
Well, Alonso taught mankind a very important lesson. Always find out who your teammate is going to be before you sign a contract. That is very important. You know, Massa, the move he made on Hamilton in Hungary, where he gave Hamilton a taste of his own medicine. I like racing. I don't care if Massa wins a race. I want a good race. Your thought on the Massa move on Hamilton when he passed him at the start, locking up all the wheels. And what about the dumb move Hamilton made running into Raikkonen in Canada?
I thought the first when you described that, that was quite amazing to me. I really didn't think that he would make a move quite like that. It sort of worked. I'm a big proponent of no contact in racing. A lot of people don't think like that. They don't like it. They don't think it's realistic. Mm-hmm. But I think if you're racing someone, you should be able to get by someone cleanly if you're faster. And if you can't, then that's that. It's not about the faster driver having a right to be in front of a slower driver. It's a competition. It's a sport in which you have to follow the rules of the competition. And the rules of the competition are that you're not supposed to, push someone out of the way. And if you can't do that, if you can't follow the rules of competition, then you don't deserve to be in front. So I don't like it when, someone pushes another driver out of the way.
Okay.
And the second one, what was that?
You were talking about Massa's five spins at Silverstone. How would you compare that to Raikkonen being rear-ended by Hamilton in the pit lane? Red means stop.
Yeah, that was a really unfortunate incident. It was real bonehead move by Hamilton, of course. But I can understand coming out of the pits and just flooring it. Hitting the rev limiter and worrying about resetting your gauges or looking at any sort of telemetry you may have, talking to your engineers. There's a lot of stuff that happens coming out of the pits, going into the pits, that I'm sure you can get distracted, and red light's not usually on, so that's kind of weird. And I've always thought the pace laps, the pits, all of that timing was quite odd in Formula One, and I really hope that they do something about that. They're supposed to this year, about opening the pits early so that people don't get stuck behind the pace car or the safety car. So hopefully that changes and we can avoid incidents like that. I think it was more an incident of organization rather than the driver, but there's no excuse for something like that. So it's obviously Hamilton's fault. And I felt really bad for Kimi, and I thought that moment after they got out of the cars was priceless. I'll never forget, Raikkonen patting him on the back and sort of sarcastically looking at and pointing at the light saying, hey, idiot, it was red.
Yeah, Hamilton is lucky. If he had done that to Paul Tracy, Paul Tracy would have put him to the ground like he did to Tagliani.
Yeah.
Okay, are you a big team fan? A lot of fans are like, Renault fan or Ferrari fan or McLaren? Are you a diehard fan of any team?
Unfortunately, no, I'm not. I really wish I had a team that I could get behind, but throughout you know, all my years of watching, it always seems like there's some driver on some team that I dislike that, you know, makes me dislike that team as well, or, you know, vice versa. I really dislike a team, but I like the driver that's on the team. If I had to pick a team, it would probably be McLaren. Probably more because of Juan Pablo's days at McLaren. And I really like Ron Dennis. I like their whole operation. I think that it's a really professional atmosphere, and they have some really smart, great people there that do good work. But no, I'm more of a driver guy than a team guy, that's for sure.
Now, if your sponsor could arrange and you have the blessing of your sponsor for a hot date, what will it be? Nicole Scherzinger or Danica Patrick?
I think my sponsor excludes me from answering that question.
For once, if you were allowed, for once, what choice would that be?
Oh, it would be my wife, of course. That's sure.
Okay, very good. Now, finally, and you please let your wife know that that was not a serious question.
I'll let her know for sure.
Okay, finally, how about a message for fellow listeners of F1 Weekly?
You know, keep listening. This is a fantastic podcast. We have you guys have some excellent interviews, just some great, great information, some really good insight. So keep listening. You know, set iTunes to download every week and check the website, visit the forums. It's fantastic. And if anybody gets an opportunity to come up to Infineon in Northern California to watch some kart racing, that's fantastic. You won't be disappointed. It's a lot of fun. And if anybody ever had the itching to go kart racing, you know, contact somebody from NorCalRotax.com, and I'm sure they set something up for you. Because it's the most fun that you'll have. Kart racing is extraordinary, and you don't need to be a professional. There's definitely places for you to start, and you won't regret it.
When is your next race?
April 4th, something like that. I should know that, but it's in about a month.
Carlos Calderon, thank you. Gracias.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com, and now the wrap-up, and of course, we've got the forum updates. Steven?
Forum updates, this week produced by Tricky Dicky, local celebrity icon. F1-related forum news, Braun F1 dominates the forum. The forum has been full of praise for the new Braun F1 team. There has been much positive speculation directed at the team's competitiveness. There has also been mixed response to Rubens Barrichello's contract extension. Scuderia Barocca is one of the many critics of the news. However, forum regulars such as Koala have been keen to offer support to Barrichello, promoting the view that his experience is vital to Braun's development. Concerns about McLaren. With disappointing results in testing, many are starting to question McLaren's overall competitiveness. Nobody likes Nick Frye. Nobody likes Nick Frye on the forum. Non-F1 related news. In an attempt to spy on forum members, Ye has created an F1 Weekly forum map to visually show where different members live. At the moment, we can see that the majority of members live in the United States and Britain. This map is quite interesting, so check it out, the topic on the forum, or visit f1weeklymap.tk. Yummy stuff. Do you like food? Check out the cheese, bacon, and baked beans related topics for images, information, and much, much more. Countryside dead? The legendary Countryside topic has seen a substantial decline in posts lately, perhaps reflecting the increase in F1-related discussions. Tricky Dicky has placed the topic into the recovery position, and hopefully it will be breathing again soon. And then we've got some statistics from Tricky. Average posts per day, 56.3. Average new threads per day, 3.05. Average posts per member, 127.86, thanks to individuals like Clark Rogers and Tricky Dicky, who are in the thousands. And replies per thread, 17.44. And then we have Tricky Dicky's daily mathematical equation, McLaren minus DC equals uncompetitive. That's all for this week. Thanks, Tricky.
outstanding forum updates there, Tricky Dick. Keep up the good work, and since DC hasn't been at McLaren for quite a while, not sure where that's going right there.
I think it has more to do with DC not on the grid, therefore...
I understand everything. But DC will be on the BBC, so it'll be BBC DC.
Or DC and the BBC.
Should be interesting. Anyway, there you have it. Real quickly, Marin Karting is proud to organize and support the 2009 Jim Russell Northern California Rotax Series. Marin Karting offers CRG carts, engines, and parts for all carts, engine service, driver coaching, and trackside support to Northern California carters. For more information, contact Marin Karting at www.marinkarting.com. Or you can give them a call at 415-898-0999. I want to mention our MySpace, Facebook, and Twitter sites have just been booming. Of course, everybody's tweeting now, or twittering, or sending tweets. I'm not sure, but I've been getting a lot of tweets from everybody. Thank you very much. Keep up the good work. So just do a search for F1 Weekly and add us as a friend. If you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website or podcast, email us at info@f1weekly.com. And, of course, we've had some problems with our website. The contact page is down because it's being built right now. And all you need to do is put our first names, Clark, Nasser, Steve, and then at f1weekly.com, and we'll get those emails. So there you have it. I want to thank everybody who makes the show possible. David Tapia, the executive producer, Steve Faub, Nasser Hamid, Toby Dawes, who always does an outstanding job, and of course, our wonderful and dedicated listeners. Good night.
Good night.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.